Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
If you're looking for the best of European football, you've come to the right place. Welcome to On the Continent. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Sivertsen.
On today's show, if sickies in the squad can't slow them down, can anything or any team stop Bayern from being crowned kings of Europe again? And why would a 17-year-old Wunderkid choose Germany over England? Also, how many chances do Real Madrid need to impress against 10 men? And it's for the hard way at the top of Ligue 1 as PSG invite Monaco to join Le Party. First, though, gentlemen, Lars and Andy, I think we have to look at some of the losers this week in the Champions League. Was that a surprising defeat for Atletico against Chelsea?
I don't know if it was that surprising, really, Dotton, because Atletico have had something not quite right for probably about a month now, even though the results have only really gone awry in the last four or five games. And them going back to this ultra-defensive sort of formation, it's a bit like an old comfort blanket, really. A bit like an old teddy. And obviously, a lot of people didn't find Atletico particularly cuddly the way they played. But I got the impression, certainly from some of that outrage to their approach on social media, that there's maybe not an acknowledgement that Atleti have evolved a little bit. And I think there has to be a bit of understanding for this kind of, we've got to say it, low-energy approach, really, Lars, because it's easier to get all behind the ball when you're knackered. And, you know, there was a lot of criticism of João Félix, for example, not being fed. But he, to me, looked like someone who's, well, had coronavirus recently.
Well, yeah, you mentioned, I think the key point here is they have had a pretty significant wobble recently. You know, dropping points to Celta, dropping points to Levante, losing to Levante. And I remember, I was watching the build-up. I don't want to dig out pundits, that's not what we're here for. But you did hear all the old cliches being trotted out about how, well, you know, if Atletico score a goal, then, you know, it's going to be very hard because it's impossible to score against Atleti. You know, they haven't kept a clean sheet in, what, 7 games now? So they're clearly not quite right. The only thing I've just felt was very, very frustrating was the energy point is I understand and is well taken. But I do wonder if we were all talking earlier in the season, they were playing in a slightly more attack-minded way. Like, they've not suddenly morphed into Zdeněk Zeman's Foggia, but they were playing a slightly more attacking manner. And honestly, it's not because they necessarily, Simeone, wanted to do that, just because the squad, it suits the squad a lot more. Now, I understand the notion that if everyone's a little bit leggy and results have suddenly turned a bit, the instinct will be to retreat back into the shell. But I'm not sure they really have the players to do that in quite the same way. They don't have quite as many players whose faces look like Goya paintings compared to what they did a few years back. They have a couple of them. But there's some footballers in here who I think you get more out of if you allow them to play football. And you listen, I don't... With Simeone, all criticism needs to be tempered with the fact that he's done an amazing, amazing job. And you can hardly blame him for defaulting onto methods that have worked before in a time of concern. But I'm not convinced the sort of a testudo formation is how you actually get the most out of the squad they have this season.
Although it's Mönchengladbach that perhaps have some sympathy for, because when you look at their position in the German league, they shouldn't really be in the Champions League, should they? And they come against a Man City, a really in-form Man City, who look like they mean business. That result wasn't so surprising, was it, Andy?
That's true, Dotton. And of course, they've had all the Marco Rosa stuff going on behind the scenes, with him being forced to deny, as we said last week, that he would take any of their players to Dortmund with him next season. So it has been a time that not only have they been preparing for a huge sporting challenge in facing Manchester City, but trying to find some sort of calm at the club. But I wish you'd been a pundit on German telly last night, actually, because they had the rather more combative Sandro Wagner, who saw the interview from Florian Neuhaus, the Gladbach midfielder, immediately afterwards, where he said, well, you know, they are better than us, but we did need to be a bit braver. And Wagner said, well, that's fine that you said that in the interview. Why couldn't you have done it on the pitch? It's not really down to the coach.
No.
And let's stay with the German theme, because Bayern went to Rome to meet Lazio. And, well, this was a Bayern team that was depleted by injuries and sickness. If I was Lazio, I'd be thinking, cool, I wouldn't like to meet them when they're at full strength. Because they got hammered, Lazio, didn't they, Lars?
They did, but if you were a Lazio, Dawson, I don't think you would have given them goals quite as easily as, I mean, you're a canny operator. I don't think you would have randomly given Lewandowski the ball right in front of the box after just a few minutes. I mean, yes, Bayern looked very good. And I have to give a shout out to our very dear friend Nicky Bandini, who I thought nailed it on Twitter while watching the game, saying, you know, every time Lazio has the ball, it looks like the pitch is really heavy, and then Bayern has the ball and it doesn't look like that anymore. And I think that's spot on. That's such a good observation by her. And you have to give huge credit, I think, to the coaching staff at Bayern, whatever they've been doing conditioning-wise. You know, we're talking about a point of the season, a very challenging season, where a lot of teams are looking very leggy. Bayern looked fabulous physically. They were flying around, and I think that's a big part of this win. Even though Lazio were very, very much the architects of their own downfall.
Yeah, I think that's right, Lars. And I think we kind of have to take a second to say the last time that Lazio got through a group stage of the Champions League, Sven-Göran Eriksson was still in charge. So them having to come up to this level, obligatory mention for Sven, Marcus Speller makes me do it. I think you have to have a bit of understanding for that. They did freeze a little. And I think you talk about the error for the Lewandowski goal at the beginning. Musacchio just settling into this team, meant to be that bit of stability, and proves to be the absolute opposite, really. But for Bayern to play with this sort of energy, I thought was really interesting. I mean, we talked about the effects, and the effects are different, I think, on different people, and are also affected by mood and where the team's at and all the rest of it. But when you bear in mind that Bayern have got 1 point from the last two Bundesliga games, they've seen their lead at the top of the Bundesliga trimmed from 7 points to two. And then you have Leon Goretzka, who's come back from coronavirus, comes into the team and makes an enormous difference in terms of driving the team forward, just propels them in a whole different way. And if Lazio made mistakes, you know, Bayern were a wolf below the dinner table. You know, they didn't need any second bidding whatsoever. Leroy Sané, who's, I think, taken a bit of criticism this season, and even when he had a good second half at Eintracht Frankfurt at the weekend, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge got stuck into him on Das Aktuelle Sportstudio, which is like the German equivalent of Match of the Day, for not defending properly. So he really grabbed the ball by the horns. Koeman was excellent. There was just so much to love about what Bayern did with what still a pretty patched up team. And, you know, they only had six subs. So I think it's not just that they played well, but they played with such energy and such dominance in this situation, given what's happened recently and all the injuries and illnesses they've had.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Bayern, but I think we are allowed to be frustrated with the manner of which Lazio gave this away. Mm. You just go through the goals one by one. The Musiala goal is excellent. Just the build-up for that was very good, with a little move inside from Davies and a wonderful little chip from Goretzka and a great finish. I mean, that's just a brilliant goal. But the first one is nonsensical, obviously, and the second two ones are counters that really should have been avoided. And even for both the Sané goal and the Acerbi goal, the Acerbi own goal, you're looking like, where are the rest of the Lazio players? Like, are they not trying to get back into their own box when you've just conceded a counter against Bayern? Like, this seems like something you should maybe do. Like, it was very, very frustrating, because obviously, you're right, Bayern were very good, and maybe Lazio doesn't have the firepower to beat Bayern when they're on this sort of form anyway, but they did make it very easy for them. Having mentioned the injuries, I think Bayern are right at the limit at what they can take, because, you know, they've had a real sort of bonus with Musiala coming through the season. I don't think they were planning for that. That's very excellent to have an extra option there. And they did have to play Nicolas Sulla at right back, which, if Lazio were able to threaten that flank at all, would have been a problem, but they weren't, so it was fine. But if you look at the rest of the squad, if anyone else go down with injuries now, you know, you're looking at Bounassar and Choupo-Moting and Mark Rocca and these sort of dudes. So they have injuries. They have just about the injuries they can sustain, but any more now and they're in real trouble.
I can't really blame Lazio, because Bayern were playing really well, and it looks like Lazio were chasing the ball for most of the game. And, you know, when you chase a ball, you just get knackered. And the mistakes that you talk about, Lars, I think are brought about because of tiredness, actually. Whereas Bayern was a team that should have looked more tired, it was the opposite, just because they had such great possession of the ball. But I was so impressed with the future in the shape of a 17-year-old who really should be playing for England, but has chosen Germany. Well, you laugh, you see. It's typical of a Norwegian to laugh at our woes. Are you watching Margaret Thatcher? Your boys will take a beating. but no, what's going on? How can England not attract the best 17-year-old in the Champions League at the moment to come and play for his own country?
Well, I mean, he's born in Germany to one German, one Nigerian parent, and plays in Germany. So, I mean, I know what you're saying, Dalton, but obviously he spent his formative years in England. But I think for him, you can understand the logic of this decision, no?
I was born in Nigeria of Nigerian parents. That is not going to stop me choosing. Well, let me think about it. Andy.
I was going to say.
You want to play for Sweden, don't you?
You're saying no to that shirt. You're not saying no to that Nigeria shirt. I know you're not. But I think with Musiala, it's partly situation, as Lars says. And it's, I think, being surrounded by a culture of success at Bayern and great Germany players of past, present and future, as he sees every day at Sabina Strasse, I think is important. But also, I think it's the personal touch by Jogi Löw, because Jogi Löw has been to see him a couple of times. He's been to talk to him after the games. He's talked him through exactly where he sees him fitting in the Germany national team. And Gareth Southgate never got out the starting blocks. So whether that's a sense that Southgate's not familiar with him, or simply thinks he has enough cover there, or it wasn't a priority for him, I don't know. But Germany did all the hard yards here. And that, I think, is a big influence on Musiala taking this, because we had Miguel Delaney on here before talking about the quite tricky concept of dual nationality and how it's not as cut and dried either in terms of heart or head as a lot of people think it is. And I certainly think that when you're 16, 17, 18, you're probably not thinking about it that hard. You're probably thinking about it in terms of, well, you know, you just go with the flow. You play with your mates in a lot of occasions. And clearly he's in a German environment at the moment. Also, though, we do have to say that he's not just any 17-year-old. And not only because he's just about to turn 18. But, Dotton, you touched on it. The fact that he's someone who already, at a club like Bayern, you know, arguably the best club team in the world at the moment, has the confidence to go in there and take the game by the scruff of the neck. You know, every single opportunity he's had this season, he's taken it. And he's taken it with both hands. He's been absolutely brilliant. As I was saying on the Ramble earlier this week, he's no shrinking violet. He's not happy to make like minor little cameo contributions. He wants to dominate the game. He wants to get into the box. He wants to score goals. He wants to make the passes. He wants to do all of that. So I think presenting a plan to someone like him is very enticing.
Yeah, I think it's there are a couple of interesting facets there. First of all, when it comes to guys who are forced, I feel uneasy about a system that kind of forces kids in their teens to pick sort of which country they belong to. This is a really tricky thing to do. I understand that the option is having a situation where players can switch, which opens a whole other can of worms. So I guess maybe it has to be this way. But I think it's really, really hard. I mean, you're not really fully... It's a big, big decision about your identity, really, that I don't know how many people are really, maybe, I'm not saying Musiala isn't, he seems like an extraordinary young gentleman, but there's a lot of people who I'm sure won't be well equipped to make that sort of call at that age. And I thought his quotes were very sensible, and they said, I have a heart for Germany and I have a heart for England, and both those hearts will keep on beating. You know, I think this is something that people have to try to understand. Now, one thing I'd like to just say at the end of that, I'm not suggesting at all that he's been thinking about, you know, pragmatism in the sporting sense and where he fits in. I'm sure, well, his reasons are his own, but I think he has something that Germany could really use, in the sense that there has been a concern in Germany that they're producing too many, in inverted commas, academy players, like very tidy footballers, whereas Musiala clearly has a bit of X factor. He's someone who's not afraid to try difficult things. He can go past people. He's got a tremendous physique. You can clearly see, if he keeps developing and steps it up another couple of notches, where he would fit into the German national team and what he would bring. Whereas if you're trying to get into the England squad as like an attacking midfielder, there's like this sort of solid wall of really good number 10s now, be it the sort of Grealish or Madison or Foden or Mount, and who Dele Alli if he comes back into it. Like, there's so many guys there. So even if he was being very pragmatic about this, which I don't know, I have nothing to suggest that he is, but if he was thinking that way, then Germany would still make a lot of sense.
Sie haben so viel an Standards gedüftet. Groß! Er macht das Tor! Toni Kroos 2-1! Das ist nicht zu fassen! Halten Sie mich fest! Und er macht alles wieder gut.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
On the Luke and Pete Show, Luke introduced me to some bizarre animal warfare.
In the 70s, there was a... I can't remember going to say this, but I promise you it's true. There was a war, an actual war, between rival chimpanzee clans that went on for over 4 years.
Meanwhile, on abroad in Japan, Chris is facing off against a natural disaster.
So the same day that I'd run out of fuel, right, I was like, well, I made it in one piece. Thank you, God. And then, like, 5 hours later, the worst earthquake I've ever experienced. It was a 15-storey building shaking from side to side. It went on so long, I was like, this hotel's coming down, and I don't want to be in it when it does.
Listen to Abroad in Japan and the Luke and Pete Show, available on your favourite podcast player.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
Let's move on to talk about Real Madrid, who also scored a decent goal against Atalanta, but they only scored one goal, having been thrown a lucky dip by the referee with a sending off in the first few minutes. This ain't Real Madrid that we think about in the Champions League, is it, Andy? They were not impressive. They struggled to get that goal. Had to wait until sometime in the middle of the second half to get it. And they had lots of chances, but it doesn't look as if Real Madrid are on fire at the moment.
No, absolutely not, Dutton. And that's it. It took a great goal from Ferland Mendy to get them that win at the end when Atalanta looked like closing out the 0-0 draw. And it felt like it was going to take a firecracker or a set piece for Real Madrid to score, really, in this game, despite playing against 10 for, 72 minutes plus stoppages, I think, in the end, after the Remo Freuler sending off. Mendy's an interesting one, though. He is a player, when that you consider that Zinedine Zidane, and we'll come to the global situation of Real Madrid in a bit, but when you consider that Zidane has really struggled to integrate signings and integrate young players. And, you know, you look at the question marks over Hazard, Eder Militao, Odriozola, all this money that Real Madrid could scarcely afford to waste at a time like this when they're rebuilding the stadium at the cost of half a billion euros. And that has been the biggest failure of his second spell in charge so far. But Mendy's just been different. They needed him at this time because Marcelo physically isn't there anymore. I think the fact that Sergio Ramos is still doing his stuff for Real Madrid normally, of course he was out injured at Atalanta this week and will be for a week or so more. I think that the fact that Mendy is able to cover him is making a massive difference to him. It's making a massive difference to the way that Sergio Ramos is able to continue producing. The interesting thing as well is that Mendy has intervened more and more on the attacking end as well. And this one, you don't expect your left-footed left back to come inside and smash one in from 20 yards with his right foot. But apparently the reason he's got such a good right foot was when he was still in the Paris Saint-Germain academy, and he had a tricky old time there because he had a hip injury at once that was so bad he had to be pushed around in a wheelchair for 8 or 9 months, is that it is a different injury that made his right foot so good, because he had this ankle injury that simply wouldn't go away, and it hurt him to strike the ball with his left foot, even though he was left-footed. So he started using his right more and more and more, and hence you get this brilliant goal away to Atalanta.
Yeah, I think God bless you, Andy. Like, we do want to sit here and talk about the football, and we don't want to sit here and talk about refereeing decisions, but I do find it incredibly hard to get past the refereeing aspect of this game. The sending off is I think is close enough to being correct that you understand why it doesn't get overturned.
Yeah, it's not heinous, is it? It's debatable,
but
it's not heinous.
I hate to be that guy, but if it's the other way, if it's for the other team and it's not at the Bernabeu, but at the training ground stadium, it doesn't get given. Like, we know for a fact that if that Sergio Ramos sort of barging over Muriel, he doesn't get sent off. Like, I'm sorry, but he doesn't. And we have the same thing down the other end, the Casemiro non-sending off, which he should have gotten a second yellow for a dive.
He should.
It's one of those things, you know, that's not going to get given against Real Madrid. And it's just, it is very frustrating. And it's not just Real Madrid, it's the whole power balance of certain clubs are so big that whether consciously, probably more subconsciously, the referees are hesitant to make those kind of big calls against them because they know what will follow in terms of hassle from the media and being thrown out to the wolves by the managers. And they know that that kind of controversy means they're less likely to get prestigious games down the line. So that they have an incentive to avoid that sort of fallout. And it is incredibly frustrating when you have a team like Atalanta who have done, I think, what every sort of small, with apologies, was a provincial club in the world a dream of, which is they still have a small budget. Like, this is still bottom half of the Serie A in terms of money. But they managed to put together a team that plays incredible football that sort of everyone enjoys. And they made it to the Champions League and they made it to the knockout stage second year in a row. And they're facing a depleted Real Madrid. They had this unique opportunity to take a historic win against Real Madrid. And you give that decision early on in the game. It's complete nonsense.
I do get what Lars is saying, though, Andy. But leaving that aside, the thing that struck me...
Dutton, how can you leave it aside?
No, very easily, because sometimes you get a bag full of lucky dips and you get all the best stuff. But the thing that struck me was how Zinedine Zidane was celebrating this one goal. And I'm thinking to myself, come on now. You've been playing against 10 men for most of this match. You can't make out like this was the Battle of Atalanta and we've just won it. What's going on?
No, that's true. And I think the fact that it's where Real Madrid are at the moment, Dutton, and it's the way they were always going to end up under Zinedine Zidane. You know, they don't play exceptional football. And I think if you go back to last weekend in La Liga, I've said elsewhere that they played worse in winning at Valladolid than Atletico did in losing at home to Levante. Real Madrid are not exactly the dream factory at the moment. If there was going to be a goal, as I said, it was always going to be a set piece or something exceptional. On the other hand, I do think we have to say where Real Madrid are going globally under Zidane is one question. And whether they're good enough to win the league if Atletico can go anywhere near holding their nerve, I think is a reasonable question. And it's going to be fascinating because not this weekend, but next weekend, Atletico will be playing Real Madrid in the derby. Now, Atletico completely lost the thread in the first game and Real Madrid ground it out, and they're so good at grinding those games out. And, you know, who knows? Maybe that will give them the edge in the title race. And it wouldn't surprise me if Real Madrid were able to go on and win the title without playing particularly exceptional football. But where we have to compliment Zidane is, A, that bloody-mindedness that his team have, and two, the fact that they've got so many players out. I mean, they had so many players out at Atalanta, he was forced to start Isco. Which, you know, bear in mind, they had to get down to 11 available outfield first teamers to actually put Isco in the team. But even then, as you say, Dotton, he's so naturally conservative. They're playing against 10 men. They've got a lot of good players on the pitch. And then they're going for it, in inverted commas. They take off Vinicius Junior and replace him with Mariano. Why don't you stick an extra attacking player on the pitch? It's because Zidane would never think to do that.
I did think that was funny in the run-up. I saw a couple of sort of projected Madrid 11s in which they still had Isco on the bench. They had Mariano starting instead. And you had the report saying, oh, there's only 11 fit first-teamers. That's a dig. That's a bit of a dig at Isco. No, listen, I need to censor myself. Listen, we shouldn't be talking about the referees. It's just the frustration got the better of me there for a minute. And you have to say, of course Zidane was pumping the air. I mean, he knows this is not a great Real Madrid team. He will know that better than anyone. And he knows they're depleted and down to the bare bones, as someone from this country would say. And they've gone away to Atalanta. Still a difficult thing to do. And even with the 10 men, yeah, it's a huge win for him. It is long term. The frustration remains, I think, with Real Madrid that they're not able to expedite this sort of generational change that needs to happen to this team, that the younger players are not given the keys to the kingdom, and that they're still looking at sort of Kroos, Modric, Casemiro, these dudes to drag them along. But it's working for now, and I guess in this season of all seasons, there's so much else going on that you're just going to have to get through and get the best results you can.
First of all, I have a feeling that Andy has let his game of the week out of the bag. We'll see if it's...
Game of next week.
Well, that's what I was thinking, Eviva España-wise. But before we come to game of the week very shortly, we've still got a few more things to discuss. But what about in the return leg, Andy? Can Atalanta do one over on this Real Madrid when they have a full 11 men on the pitch?
Well, it's funny because despite Lars eloquently pointing out that we kind of got robbed of what should have been a very exciting opportunity. A very exciting opportunity for Atalanta. And the 0-0 result, bizarrely for a team like that, would have been absolutely perfect, I think, for them to go away and know that they just needed one goal in the Bernabeu, which I feel pretty convinced that they're able to get, would put Real Madrid in a whole world of pain. But I think to think that Real Madrid have got it all sealed up already is incorrect. And I think if you look at some of Real Madrid's results in home legs of knockout ties over the last couple of years, I think, you know, you look at them against Juventus, you look at them against Ajax, I don't think it's a fait accompli by any stretch of the imagination. And Atalanta do have those different attacking options, which because of not just the sending off, but the injury to Duvan Zapata as well, they were unable to use. So, you know, you got the point where Josip Iličić came on, for example, and he was just unable to get a foothold in the game because by that point it was all one way and Madrid sort of chipping away diligently, trying to get a chance and them sort of monopolising the ball. So 11 versus 11 in the Bernabeu, I'm keen to see it.
Not a fait accompli. I think we'll move on.
Goal! Del Real Madrid, a 5 del final, aparece Jesse para el 4-0.
Talking of fait accomplis, it doesn't look as if anybody wants to accomplish any fate in the I failed extraordinary. My French O level. It was extraordinary. But at the top of Ligue 1, nobody wants to flipping, well, make use, take the ball by the horns and run with it. And thanks to PSG, they've just invited Monaco to the party by losing 2-0. I know that's your specialist subject, Andy, but let's go to Lars first for this. PSG doing really well in the Champions League, but seem to be having howlers time and again in their domestic league. How come?
Yeah, I watched this game against Monaco, which wasn't as fun as you'd think in Monaco upset at the Parc des Princes should be. Not a ton of chances, but I think I kind of feel this. I was about to say, I kind of feel for Maurizio Pochettino. I mean, that might be my default position over the last couple of years. But in this game, when Verratti can't start or has to be rested, when Di Maria's not around, when Neymar's not there, you end up starting a midfield of Idrissa Gana Gueye, Leandro Paredes, and Ander Herrera. It's not a ton of creativity in there. As much as PSG have an embarrassment of riches, they kind of don't when you take a couple of players out of it. And now that is a diss aimed in the direction of Julian Draxler and Rafinha, who came in and were not able to provide the kind of creativity that you want. But they looked so one-paced in midfield, PSG, and they really struggled to move the ball forward with any great conviction. And you can have, the new best player in the world, Kylian Mbappe, as we're sort of rapidly moving towards. But you got to feed him, you got to feed the goat, as they say. And they weren't able to do that with any sort of conviction or consistency, I thought. And I want to turn this around. You can say that for Pochettino, coming in at PSG and then not winning the title in France is a minor catastrophe, but I would flip that on its head and say that actually there's no way PSG could like sack him now. Like, even by their standards, this would be completely nonsensical. So the fact that the team's shortcomings are being brought to bear so clearly could actually be helpful for him down the line, because it gives him the chance to go to the board and say, I know you want to sign Messi and you want to spend money on all these big names or whatever, but I need this and this and this, because look, my squad doesn't work. And maybe having a few, trying to put a positive spin on it for him and for PSG, maybe having a few duff results like this going forward will highlight some of the failings in the squad that need to be addressed.
But wasn't this the same PSG that made mincemeat out of Barcelona just the other week, Andy? Mbappe was nowhere to be seen.
It's as if Barcelona aren't that good, Dotton. I think it's interesting, because if you look at their difficulties, not just in this game, but generally against the rest of the top four over this season, they've taken 1 point from direct confrontations with the other teams in the top four. Add on to that home defeat against Marseille, who definitely thought they were going to be in the top four at the start of the season. And it's just a litany of Paris not being able to show up on the big occasion and beating up on the weaker teams. I think Mbappe, we can kind of give him a pass for this, because he contributed so much in that Barcelona game. And I thought it was interesting what Lars was saying about Monaco's approach to this. They went to, early on, overrun Paris physically, because they thought, well, they're going to be knackered from giving so much in Barcelona in the week. And I think that was pretty sound, that idea of catching them on their heels early on. And teams don't really go to the Parc des Princes and try and do that. And if you look at the way that, say, Marseille won there earlier in the season, it was completely opposite in terms of approach. It was defend, 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 sucker punch. So I think that bit of bravery is going to be really important in the rest of this title race. Monaco are very, very well set up to do that, because I think defensively I still have my questions about them, even though they kept a clean sheet in this game. And they're much better on the front foot. But if teams can be brave enough to have a go at Paris, especially their direct rivals, and that's something that's quite interesting, I think, and especially in the case of Lyon and Monaco, who don't have European football to play, Paris Saint-Germain are going to be more and more implicated in the Champions League. it makes me think that maybe this title race can at least keep going for a little bit longer. And Lille, who won 4-1 at Lorient at the weekend and played really well, they've got a lot of forward options. They look the best of the lot at the moment. And interestingly, or well, it might be, again, a fait accompli by the time you listen to this, but they're playing the second leg of their Europa League tie against Ajax tonight. They lost the first leg. I don't really fancy them getting through the second leg. I think really from their perspective, if they go out of Europe, it's not the worst thing in the world at this stage. And then you have three teams who are really only going to be playing one game a week for most of the rest of this season, Coupe de France notwithstanding. And that does make it a bit more tricky for PSG. But like Lars, I don't think Pochettino's future really rests on this, because you think of the last time they changed coach mid-season, it was when Antoine Comboire went out and Carlo Ancelotti came in. Ancelotti inherited a team that was first and guided them to second behind Olivier Giroud's Montpellier. So, and he's considered the best PSG coach of modern times. So, you know, maybe if anything, losing the league is a good thing for Pochettino.
I mean, he has... One of the things he's done so far that hasn't fully worked out is it looks to me like Pochettino's really trying to make Mauro Icardi happen and give him a lot of time at centre forward. And Icardi can be so frustrating because he can be just one of the most impressive finishers. But, you know, when he's not quite on it, he's kind of like the David Blaine of football. Like, he spends a lot of time in a box not doing anything. Which just isn't very good when you're in particular having trouble creating stuff. So I don't know. It's frustrating, and I think as much as there's talk, it's all about, we got to bring Neymar in, and can we have Neymar and Mbappe? No, sorry, we got to bring Messi in. Can we have Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe? I still think there's more to do with the squad in beefing up the midfield and allowing Pochettino to have the type of players that he wants for the type of football he's been brought in to provide.
Do we have to explain that David Blaine in the box reference to people who don't know where the River Thames is and haven't heard River Deep Mountain High?
They have the internet. It's fine. They'll figure it out.
Andy?
I love that analogy. I'm definitely having that. And I think, unfortunately, he's destined to be part of this galaxy of stars for so much longer. I mean, it's interesting. Leonardo's done an interview today where he's talked about them, in his opinion, being quite close on the extension of Kylian Mbappe, which is clearly a good thing. Close on Neymar as well. And that their main aims are to re-sign the Fantastic Four. Well, as he says it, and I think if you're Juan Bernat, you're pretty pleased that you've got squeezed in that Fantastic Four of Mbappe, Neymar, Di Maria and Bernat. And that gives them very little space with which to work. So I think with Pochettino, I mean, people always say that if you're in charge of a club with more money than God, where's the challenge? Could you do it at a lesser club? I think it's a whole different sort of problems. This is very much Notorious B.I.G. puffy end of the park, isn't it?
Your games of the week, gentlemen. And OK, Andy, you're not going for the Madrid derby a few days later than perhaps we would like. But what would your game of the week be for us to salivate over?
There are some crackers this weekend, but the one I'm going to have to go for, you're going to have to wait till Sunday night, Marseille versus Lyon, which... I think we're a bit early yet to be talking about the Olympique de Marseille revival, but of course they've got a coach coming from our friend Tim Vickery's land in Jorge Sampaoli. That's going to be made official in the next few hours as we record, I understand. It won't be on the bench, it looks like, in time for the game on Sunday night, not least because of coronavirus regulations. I can't wait to see how it's going to work. He's so explosive, and they're such an explosive club. It's going to be fascinating. But at least since Andre Villas-Boas has left, Dimitri Payet started to play a bit more like himself as well. So it's a huge challenge for Lyon to go there and get the result they need to stay in the title race. And there's always so much chip between these two teams as well. So even if a lot of Marseille's ambitions have gone for a walk this season, they will absolutely love to have a go at beating Lyon.
And Ash, where are you going to go for your game of the week?
Now, listen, if you're looking for fun and goals, you know, I would tend to look towards RB Leipzig versus Gladbach. You know, two teams who like to push right up, like to attack. None of them have a big plan B in terms of like sitting back and stifling. That should be exciting, high energy. But, you know, it's not all about the goals and the great football, you know. Sometimes you need a bit of tension. Sometimes you need a bit of tension. Sometimes you need a bit of tension. And I think on Sunday, it might clash with Andy's game. I might have to two-screen this. But I think it might be a dreadful game. But Villarreal versus Atletico Madrid is wonderfully tense just because Atleti have had their wobble near the top of the table. Villarreal had been going very well under Unai Emery in the autumn, but they themselves have been on this sort of really weird run now where they've drawn, I think it is, five games. They've had five games and one defeat in their last six. Five draws and one defeat in the last six. So odd stuff from Villarreal, but clearly a competent outfit and the type of sort of fairly solid defensive outfit that'll often give Atletico Madrid a bit of trouble, because Atleti won't really be allowed to play their sort of counter-attacking thing. This could potentially be dreadful in terms of entertainment, but it is a really exciting game because this sort of nascent title race, it did look like Atleti were running away with it in Spain, but they're not anymore. Real Madrid are hot on their heels. Barcelona, for all their troubles, keep winning games in the league. So the Atleti lead is slipping away, and they have some injuries now, and they're not looking very good. And then they're playing a slightly sort of cagey, tricky Villarreal team against Unai Emery there. I think that could be an interesting one Sunday night. But you might want to two-screen this if they clash time. I think, yeah, the timings are clashing exactly, Dalton. You might want to two-screen this and have Marseille-Lyon on your main screen. Just keep a little eye on what's going on with the Yellow Submarine versus Diego Simeone.
Squeaky bum one. Game.
Yeah, exactly right.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.